welcome everybody. We invite you to pull up a chair, kick off your shoes, and listen to some great sales stories today with that pilgrim on the 405, Will Crist, as he wanders the world in search of the latest techniques and technologies that will let you blaze new trails in the world of sales. So here he is, your own personal guide through the world of sales, Will Crist.
Well, here we are on the 405, looking around and finding lots of new things. You know, what I'm finding is that in this new marketplace, there's a new way of selling. And there's lots of untapped resources for companies who are looking to reinvent themselves, to adapt to the new marketplace, or to just improve their stature with the under 30 generation. What I've discovered is that while senior executives are gradually coming to the place where they are willing to learn online marketing, dabble in social networking, and maybe try out instant communication, they learn it as if it were a second language. It takes time. It takes practice. It's going to be lots of mistakes, and it will probably never be second nature. Some of the opportunities out there because of this marketplace are these thousands of recent graduates who have yet to find a job with a career path in the business they want to be in. There are folks who are working as valets or car wash people. There are people who are taking any job they can find after they graduate as they look for other opportunities. Now, there's lots of opportunities out there, but when they find the jobs, very often, there's a line outside of people who've been laid off, but who have much more experience than these recent graduates have, and very often, the jobs go to those recent graduates. Unfortunately, for the companies, these more experienced people speak that older language of business that they learned in the old marketplace. Wouldn't it be interesting if there were a way to tap this resource of young graduates, the ones who have learned this language of the new marketplace as a first language? Wouldn't it be valuable to bring some of these people into companies knowing that many of their ideas might sound and might even be impractical? But at the same time, these are people who will immediately speak the language of the new marketplace. These under 30 graduates learn the language of the new marketplace as a first language. It's second nature to them. They don't understand that there's any other way to communicate. Startups are looking for enthusiasm and effort, but they don't have money available to them as they used to. Companies are facing tight budgets and even layoffs. What about interns? It sounds like there are many places for both companies and recent graduates to win in this scenario. As I was walking up and down the 405, getting to know people, I came across a fellow who has put together a website that is very creative, puts together companies who are looking for interns, allows those companies to search through the interns who have applied for positions as interns. We begin to have a conversation about how this might help CEOs and companies in Orange County. And in the process of that, we discovered that there was another part of the conversation that we wanted to bring in. So I want to start off introducing Mark Babbitt. Mark, tell us a little bit about your idea about U-Turn. We spend a little time with you, and then we'll introduce Bill.
Well, thank you, Will. We at U-Turn found out quite some time ago that there was a wholly underserved market in this, in what you called recent graduates, that also happens to include students that are still in college, where they don't really have a place to go right now. You know, the reality is promises were broken. We told all of our kids that if they worked hard and they studied hard and they were good citizens, that when they got out of high school or college, a job would be waiting for them. And unfortunately, in our new economy, that's no longer the case. And more of them are turning to internships as a resume marker, as a platform from which they can build their careers. And it occurred to us that, especially in the startup and the small business market, there wasn't a place they could go. There was no monster.com for interns with an entrepreneurial spirit, and that's why we started U-Turn.
So what's been your experience so far with U-Turn?
Well, keep in mind, we just launched on May 15th, but the experience so far has been incredible. We've received both internship opportunities from startups and small businesses literally throughout the world, as well as candidates from throughout the world, including Singapore, China, several candidates and companies from India, which is trying to be their own economy at this point, Canada, and of course throughout the United States. So far the response has been overwhelming.
Well, I know that my wife, as the dean of a school of education, has looked at graduates there, knowing that those teachers are probably not going to find jobs in the school districts here in Southern California because of the large number of layoffs. And what she's been doing is very similar to what you've been doing, is she's been encouraging them to take jobs internationally, to take internships, to take other opportunities that would keep them in the career path. And when the jobs open up, they'll be available and ready to do that. Are you finding that in multiple industries?
We sure are. And what's amazing is this Gen Y, this under 30 talent. Not only are they predisposed to create, but they don't seem to be anchored to where they might create. You know, in previous generations, we might have wanted to stay a little closer to home. And with Gen Y, the idea is to get out and be on their own and work on their own and create on their own. And sometimes that involves, seeking positions outside their normal thought process, and that includes overseas work.
Hmm. And so what I find fascinating is that you're finding intern opportunities globally.
Yes, and also another interesting part of it is, these new technologies that we have available to us today that we all take advantage of also allows for considerable virtual positions. U-Turn currently has four interns of our own, and only three of them are are international, one in Ukraine, one in Singapore, one in Canada. So a lot of the work that can be done, logo work, web development, business copy, marketing, it can be done virtually, and that opens up a whole other category of work.
So what is the advantage to a company right now to hire an intern?
Well, I think the main advantage, and you touched on it in your introduction, is the enthusiasm, the passion this young talent brings to a company. I know most of my executive level is the 40 to 50, maybe a little bit older than that range, and we certainly have our experience and we certainly have our passions. But Gen Y seems to bring a whole other level to that, and the enthusiasm, the youthfulness, and of course their expertise in technologies that maybe we don't understand fully, iPhone applications, the previously mentioned web development, that kind of thing. They bring a wealth of knowledge.
Well, now that you mention iPhone apps, and I assume that's going to be iPad apps right away. That's where I found it very interesting that you introduced me to Bill Washburn. Bill, I want Bill to tell us a little bit about what he's doing up from at BMIC in Berkeley, because what I'm understanding from him is that this Gen Y has a whole different way of being in the world in terms of communication. What we used to call marketing is this making available resources to people through Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn. Bill, why don't you chime in? And I know this is going to be going to become a very enthusiastic and passionate conversation, but tell us a little bit about BMIC.
Sure. Thanks. BMIC is the Berkeley Mobile International Collaborative, and it's about the opportunities that students are seeking in the mobile app development space because they're interested in technology and they're interested in an entrepreneurship, as well as being able to have a chance to do things now rather than waiting until after they're completely out of school. I think this is a variation on the theme that we've already been talking about, and they have, a different sense, not only of language, which I really agree with your analogy that they have this new language as second nature to themselves. They also have something quite different from the rest of us, I think, in terms of their sense of communication rights and opportunities. What I'm getting at is that we all come out of a hierarchical model of organizations, you know, silos or however, whether you're in education or in the business world or in the military or government, there's a very clear and rigid hierarchy. But I think the kids, the young men and women coming out of school today and still in school today have a very horizontal network sense of communication. And they are, you know, they're up for doing things now and doing it the way that they naturally do it, which is, you know, ignore the barriers, ignore who's up and who's down in the chain of command, et cetera. So we're just focused on, at BMIC, we're focused on the mobile app development territory as an entrepreneurship experience for students while they're still in school to gain marketplace awareness and begin to really transform themselves into capable, experienced workers and entrepreneurs.
Now, tell me a little bit, Bill, about, you mentioned this move from hierarchical to horizontal. And then you talked about networking.
Yes.
Networking that I've experienced very often has to do with people looking to get new clients, new customers, or find jobs. And it seems to be me that networking in the old marketplace had to do with how can you help me? How can you help me find a job? How can you help me find new clients? How can you help me build my business? Now, I'm sensing that is a very different model today when you talk about networking.
Indeed. I would say that that what you just described as the old, you know, conventional notion of networking just really wouldn't make sense today in, you know, in the Facebook world, for example. LinkedIn probably maybe a little, it would have a little bit of a ring for some people, but even there I think that it's less so. But specifically social networking, and it's called social because it's about who are your friends, who are the friends of your friends, who are the people that you admire, who are the people that you would like to follow, what they're saying or what they're working on, what they're caring about, and vice versa, of course. And that there is this cross-fertilization that occurs as a result. And you have, you know, literally order of magnitude or more ability to both reach out and to be reached from afar very quickly. And it is truly networking that is electronic and virtual, not kind of this going to cocktail parties and seeing how many business cards you can walk away with.
Mm-hmm. Now that
and it's very powerful, this new form of networking.
Well, it's a new language, right?
Yes, exactly. And they wouldn't even know to think of those two ways of doing things as as related for in the minds of some of us.
Yeah, it's like a fish wondering about water. They don't. They are water.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Now, I'm wondering what kind of role that you and Mark can play in helping this, I'm going to use this new group of natives speaking a different language. How do we get them into companies rather than leave them on their own, forcing them to create their own companies and go through all of that learning curve? How do we enfold them in? How do we get them invited in to companies in ways that's going to be helpful to the company and an opportunity for these recent graduates and people who haven't graduated yet?
Mark, do you want to attack that, or –
No, I'd be happy to. I think the first thing, Will, and Bill, I think you'll agree with this based on our previous conversations, is we have to invite them in. We have to be open to the idea that the Gen Y talent that's out there is creative and open and passionate and not afraid to articulate their passion. And that alone might be a little foreign to some of us who might have in our old business lives held things a little close to the vest. All it takes is one look at even one Gen Y LinkedIn or Facebook account, or especially a Twitter account, to understand they're passionate about everything, it seems, from the project they're working on to the sushi place they're eating as they Twitter. And it's amazing what can happen when you allow that environment to infiltrate into your company and the way you do business. And I think that's the first step, is we have to invite them in with open arms and acknowledge that they're different, acknowledge that they probably write in all lowercase when they send you an email, and they might write in run-on sentences, because what's important to them is to get their passions out, not to follow some old-school mainstream way of communication.
Yeah, that's a really powerful point, and I would elaborate on that, because I strongly agree that they're not about the image of things. I think we come out of a world where everything was pretty much forced into the mold of being perfect image-wise, and what was below the surface was not revealed, was not even welcome, in a sense. And that has gone by the board, as it must. It's a more real existence that they have, that they want everyone else to know about, and that's what they want to know about from others as well. I think as a result of that, they are much more capable and willing of getting out of lockstep conventional approaches to I do this, then I do that, then I do something else, all in the name of getting my resume perfected, all in the name of having exactly the right words on my profile, etc. And rather, they're more interested, more aware that the real work is coming from their, you know, their imperfect selves, and everybody is imperfect in certain ways, and they're not shy to explore that and to welcome it. And it scares us.
Well, I'm thinking, on the one hand, it scares us. On the other hand, I'm concerned that this enthusiasm and this creativity in a conventional company, is going to try to own that. They're going to try to become it and take it over. And it seems to me that's going to be antithetical to to the culture that we're trying to bring in.
I think that's pretty reasonable and fairly accurate. I would say, however, you know, I live up here in the Silicon Valley area, and companies are getting the fact that they cannot continue in their traditional ways, and even a company as command and control oriented as Cisco, for instance, which has been, you know, just a brilliantly effective execution company. Their CEO, John Chambers, has, you know, been quoted a number of times over the last year or so saying, "We are no longer talking about an army of workers. We are a community."
Hmm.
And it involves all of us who are within the walls, but these walls are permeable, or at least semi-permeable, and it's in our stakeholders, our suppliers, our customers, and there is a community that we are working with and that works with us. And it's, to my mind, it's clear evidence of this awareness that it's becoming more horizontal, even within silos that are becoming, you know, not that they aren't silos, but they are at least becoming permeable.
Mark,
meaning there's a lot more communication. Sorry.
All right, Mark, tell me, how will U-Turn help to break through this semi-permeable membrane around older companies?
Well, that's a good question. When we started U-Turn, we had to ask ourselves, you know, literally what we wanted to be when we grew up. We had the idea that startups and small companies and even larger companies with an entrepreneurial mindset would naturally invite young talent in their doors, and it turns out that that's very true. However, there's also some education that goes along with that. We strongly believe that almost every company, regardless of size, can benefit from Gen Y and emerging talent. And we have to also set a stage where that's a productive experience, and not just for the intern, but for the company also. And that's where the education comes in. A startup company especially, they have a lot to do on their plate already. And some of them, when we talk about the concept of bringing in an intern, they say, oh boy, there's yet another person for me to manage. And that's just not an effective use of my time when the truth is, the exact opposite is true. 5-year studies have shown that for every 3 hours that an executive or a manager spends mentoring an intern, they'll gain about 20 hours of productive time. So what we try to do is not just find a good home for an intern to spread his wings a little bit and see firsthand how to start his own company and to work with a small team and to foster his entrepreneurial spirit, but also how to contribute right away and how to be managed effectively so that contribution is real and it's immediate.
Do you have or do you know of places, if you don't have, are there places for interns to talk to each other on U-turn.com?
No, there's not. Now, version 2, we will be, we've been talking a lot already about social networking, and version 2 of U-turn will incorporate a social networking aspect. So the interns can not only speak to each other, but they can speak to career center representatives. They can speak to CEOs and executives of startups. They can speak to people like Bill Washburn, who might have a different take than a mentor they have immediately available to them. And they'll actually become, if LinkedIn right now is where somebody goes to find their next job, version 2 of U-turn will be where they go to find their first job. And that's our vision for version 2 of U-turn.
Will there be a place for CEOs or HR people in larger companies to get some education, hear some advocacy about the role of interns?
The good news is we have that now in version 1. We actually set out to form some terrific partnerships with companies some were intern advocates, some, for instance, Intern Bridge out of Boston, the wholly intern advocates, years and years of research to back up their hypotheses and their views on how internships should be run. And they represent both the company and the interns, but maybe with a little bit of an intern slant. And then we also have partnerships with a gentleman by the name of David Kofer. And David Kofer has done nothing but promote the concept of how to effectively use interns as a flexible workforce for your startup or small business. And both of those resources are available to us now.
How would a CEO in Orange County access that information?
We actually have a resources page on U-turn.com.
Okay, so it's youtern.com.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Now, Bill, you're sitting up in Silicon Valley, Ground Zero. I think you put it Ground Zero of a lot of technical technology innovation. Tell me what you're seeing there. I was interested in hearing about Cisco. What else are you seeing going on in other companies?
Well, it was interesting to hear this last part of the conversation you two were having, and because up here in the Valley, the HR VPs and senior VPs and C-level HR folks have had now for a number of years an HR high-tech forum community that they participate in to talk with each other. I would say that's one of the hallmarks of the Valley that the rest of the country may not be quite so conscious of, is that the companies that work here, flourish here, get their start here, or transplant themselves here, quickly learn that the culture is one of competition and sharing information more or less simultaneously. There is so much opportunity. There is a sense of, if we can talk with each other, we'll learn faster, and yes, there will be more competition, but we'll be able to have a better chance of succeeding and being part of the equation rather than pretending that we know everything and all those other competitors out there know nothing. So we should keep quiet and keep everything, you know, behind our walls. There's very much an openness around communication among HR professionals and others throughout the Valley, I would say. And I think that what you're talking about with respect to internship, U-turnship opportunities is something that they really ought to be exposed to and start being part of sooner rather than later, as in immediately.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm seeing this as a great resource for companies. It's also a great resource for the country. And what we're talking about is how we manage this resource and maximize the productivity.
Indeed, indeed. And I would say that that's where, you know, the kind of communication, this horizontal networking capability that isn't about just, I want to get more information from you, but I'm not willing to give you information back, has had to change and is indeed going to continue to change because the rate of innovation is simply so profound that to pretend that you can control things, that you can be the owner of a whole technology space, is simply ludicrous. And so it is better to be in conversation and to be sharing. And I think the rest of the, you know, certainly the rest of California, and I would say the rest of the U.S. would be well served to figure that out, to embrace it, and to get with the program, so to speak, because it makes a lot of sense.
My sense is that I think Mark picked up on it right at the very beginning. He said that we've not come through on the promises that we made to our children. And another way of looking at that is that the system is broken because our economy, our marketplace, has changed dramatically. And part of the question that I think we're looking at, or trying to answer, is how do we successfully move those folks into our businesses without abandoning them?
Well, I might argue that it may not be the system that's broken, it more that it's evolved and that our expectations are broken.
Ah.
We still seem to think that, again, there's going to be that that job waiting for us at the end of our education rainbow. And that hasn't been true now since, probably early 2008 that hasn't been true. And there is no sign at all that that's going to change now. There is no, proverbial light at the end of the tunnel where a college student feels really good about his chances of landing work. And as a matter of fact, the National Association of Colleges and Employers came out with a statistic a couple months ago that said that about 20%, 2 out of 10, students expected to have a job at the end of the school year this year. That's the graduating seniors. And that's scary. That's a little bit scary. Now, statistics are a little better than that. Statistics show that about 45% of our young adults, 18 to 24, are unemployed. And another 6% have probably just given up on the workforce because they know there's not much out there. They moved back in with mom and dad. They went and got some grants and student loans so they could continue their education and graduate work. But they literally just left the workforce. But that's still that's over half of the young adults that just don't see a light at the end of the tunnel, and that's a little scary. So I would say it's our expectations that are a little askew.
Yeah, I would say what we are talking about is that our culture of work probably, and certainly our culture in education, has not kept up with the pace of change and the nature of change and the degree to which it really has innovated, evolved, you know, even become something of a revolution. And it used to be, of course, we all know that the old model of education was treat students as blank slates or empty vessels that need to be filled up. And when they are, they can go out and become cogs in the industrial wheel of industry. And that's way, way, way out of date, of course. We all know that. And one of the reasons perhaps the places like the Valley have become a bit more clearly bellwethers of what's going to happen tomorrow is that all of the value of companies, whether it's Google or Facebook or Apple or Microsoft, Yahoo, HP, you name it, in the technology arena, almost all of the value, all of the assets of those companies, they get up out of their desks and go home every night and could very well go someplace else to work tomorrow. And that those companies don't own their assets in quite the way that the industrial world had companies that owned the engines of growth and of, you know, of productivity. And so there has had to be, and indeed is, a very profound change in how the relationship between workers, if you will, or contributors and their companies has evolved. And I think everybody would benefit, really, in the world, in the marketplace, from recognizing the importance of having a view of young workers, young, soon to be leaders, but now just workers, as assets to be worked with, even if it's only at the level of internship or the level of things that are less than, you know, the perfect job and the perfect salary.
We're talking about assets turning off your computer or changing your internet and their world.
Will, I'm sorry to say that that was pretty much a garbled. I myself didn't hear it. I don't know if you heard it, Mark.
No, I'm sorry, I didn't.
All right. What I'm saying is that what I'm hearing with remote and virtual workers, that not only are the assets going to get up and walk out at night, the assets, all they have to do is simply change their email address or turn off their computers, and the asset is gone.
That's potentially the case every day.
Yeah. Well, I want to spend some more time talking about this, and I want to get down to some very personal things about what I've been discovering in people that I talk to regularly. But before that, I want to take a little time off here and take a break, and then we'll come back and pick up here where we left off.
Cool.
And now let's move to the 17th. John Rollins has 123 yards to the hole and needs to stick this shot tight to have a chance for birdie. Looks like he likes it. Should have the distance. Yes, he nailed it to inside 2 feet.
What does it take to perform when the pressure's on? Ask PGA Tour golfer John Rollins, and he'll tell you it takes years of hard work. And it takes ongoing coaching and support from people who are determined to help you excel. The same is true with sales. That's why at Sandler Training, we bring you the reinforcement you need to take on any sales challenge. You won't fail, because we won't let you. Sandler Training. Proud supporters of PGA Tour golfer John Rollins and thousands of exceptional sales performers around the world. Finding power in reinforcement.
Need to do more in less time? Losing valuable leads, prospects, or customer information by not following up properly? Or are you just starting a business and want to easily manage leads, prospects, customers, email, direct mail, and phone marketing campaigns all in one place easily? Then you need to call InfoWare. InfoWare offers the same solution that over 2.8 million business people have been successfully using for 20 years, Act by Sage. InfoWare has been helping businesses get their act together since 1993 with their team of Act certified consultants and business system professionals who are dedicated in helping make your business perform. Call InfoWare at 877-TECH-SOLUTIONS. That's 877-832-4765, or visit myinfoware.com today. Drop by the LA Mixer for a demo and register for a free copy of ACT to be given away every hour. Member of the BBB and authorized by Dell, Sage, Microsoft, QuickBooks, and more.
Visit us at LA's largest mixer, July 23rd at the Shrine Auditorium Expo Center. For details, log on to LAMixer.com.
Hi, it's time for more insights from Sandler Training. Think about what you do each day. How much of your effort generates income, pay time? And how much of it only supports the generation of income, no pay time? Pay time activities include finding buyers, getting appointments, making sales calls, making referral calls, and servicing your customers. Unless pay time is consistently 90% or more of your effort, reorganize your day. Keep a cookbook and manage it hard. Plan the precise ingredients that must go into your day. Map out the specific behavior you need to reach your daily goals. Most contact management systems allow for tracking and tallying daily performance. And that's another tip from Sandler Training, finding power through reinforcement.
And now back to Will Crist and the Pilgrim on the 405.
Well, one of the things that I've been thinking about, Mark, is we shared a little bit about friends that we knew, and one of my nephews, I just wanted to bring this up. One of my nephews just came back last year from his second tour of duty in Iraq, where he worked on tanks, maintained tanks, and coming back thought that would be a great piece of experience that he could then translate into working in a manufacturing plant or place where, you know, he'd have equivalent experience. He's even gone to junior college and spent some time there getting the courses that he thought would equip him. And what he's telling me is that when he finds job opportunities, that there are others who've been displaced in the marketplace with lots more experience who are way ahead of him. And he is very discouraged by that. And has even said, you know, if this doesn't change, maybe I'll just have to go back to Iraq and do another tour of duty. Now, I think that would be such a tragic waste of our country's talent. And if it's true with him, it's got to be true with thousands of other kids.
Well, and it is. Well, as unfortunate as it is, as a veteran myself, and as an older guy who has a son in the Air Force now. Who certainly plans on finding a well-paying vocation when he gets out, or at least did. It's a struggle right now, and it's a struggle not just for your nephew, but it's a struggle for almost everybody that's just now entering the workforce, and especially the civilian workforce. The last thing that we would want anybody to do is re-enlist, if you will, and I use that term not just for your nephew, but everybody, is to re-enlist into their old way of life because they don't see a big future in their new life. And well, not a step backwards, maybe a lateral step, it certainly isn't the dream that we all thought we were signing up for. And that's where an internship or a temporary assignment or doing something that maybe you didn't think of while you were doing your second tour in Iraq might help you think of a way to work yourself out of what appears to be a pretty bleak situation. And it's amazing how many people in your nephew's situation have turned to these new technologies to find work to find an internship, to find something that maybe they're instinctively good at, this second nature you talked about, and becoming, something other than what they thought they might be. They might be a social networking expert because that's what they do until 11:30 at night anyway, so why not make money at it? Or they might have to learn a little HTML just to support a little consulting venture. It forces us to think out of the box. It forces us to be innovative, and in some ways that's not a bad thing.
Now, Bill, some of the things that you're doing to encourage entrepreneurship with, tell us a little bit about your contest.
Sure. The idea behind the University Mobile Challenge is to give students, while they're still in school, a much bigger, better, and clearer taste, if you will, of what they're facing and what they're entering into in the marketplace of work, of competition, of entrepreneurial activity. And so the nature of the course is to get students, teams typically of engineer and business students, say four or six on a team, to create a working app or mock-up of an app based on a concept that they've come up with themselves, something that they either dreamt up entirely new or that they feel like is a big improvement on something that they already are aware of or know about out there. And then at the same time create the business case and do all of the research in the background for what kind of money it's going to take to develop it, to take it to market, who's going to be the customer base and all of that. And then thirdly, to create a compelling short presentation that is the last day of class when each of the teams in turn present to a panel of judges who are in fact venture capital folks, partners and the like. And the panel of judges at the end of the presentation says, okay, you know, based on what we've seen, this is the one or these are the two that really shine, and here's why. And it's really a powerful experience, and it's not a powerful experience just for the teams who win, but in fact, it becomes a very powerful experience for everybody on all of the teams because they've all had a very similar version of the experience. They know suddenly how it feels, what it's like. They suddenly have this knowledge in their body of what it meant to go through that process, what a startup team and working with a startup team is like. Anyway, the winners get to go up to an intercollegiate competition amongst other schools, and then ultimately there's a global competition. So it's based on the sports model, and the idea is just like with sports, you do a heck of a lot of work as an athlete, preparing yourself and then delivering on your skills while you're still in school. And it's on that basis that there are those who get to succeed and so on and so forth as we're all aware of. This is a similar concept to what we think would make a lot of sense for students in fields like entrepreneurship and others beyond that eventually.
Hmm. Well, that's great. I'm looking forward to seeing that whole course up on iTunes University.
Exactly, and on YouTube. Indeed, and it's shortly going to be there. This course has already gone on a couple of times at Berkeley. A few other universities are doing their versions of that kind of thing, and it's always very transformative with students. They individually say, you know, I walked into this course like it was any other course. I thought I was going to, you know, compete for an A or a B or whatever. And I came out of this course feeling like I literally knew what it meant to be on a startup team about to enter the marketplace and how exciting, exhilarating, challenging, scary, et cetera, that really is, and how much responsibility I have to be ready when and to go for it.
So
it's very related to internships, I would say.
Yeah, now, as I recall, the business plan model that Fred Smith did was, I think, at Yale, was FedEx. Is that right?
FedEx was partly motivated, if I've got the story right, by the fact that the fellow who was the CEO, the founder of FedEx, was told by whomever, the judge, the professor, that isn't a good idea, and you're never going to succeed, so stop being so stupid, something like that. And that was the motivation. And I think that that's a similar kind of motivation both for those who win and those who lose, so to speak, lose in quotes, in something like what we're talking about. The difference here is that it's not just a business plan competition. And a lot of people are excited about the fact that it is literally the doing of the work. It is creating the mock-up mobile app. It is going out and talking to prospective customers and doing all the business case work as opposed to just writing about it.
So have you thought about American Idol for iPhone apps?
Well, you know, it's funny that you mention that because there have been a lot of people, as they hear about this, that's exactly where they go.
That's certainly getting a lot of traction, a lot of interest, a lot of votes, a lot of attention being paid.
Yes. You could say that it was American Idol that persuaded the U.S. marketplace that smartphones were going to be successful in the end, because for a while it was like, I don't know if it's going to happen in this country. the way it did in other countries earlier.
So tell me a little bit more about how you see this mobile communication, this whole world of telecommunication. How do you see that as playing out with these recent graduates and new graduates?
Well, talk about a second language. I would say in first language, in the case of young college men and women, this is part and parcel of their experience of the world, in just the way that you know the generation that we come from is at a minimum, you know, committed to and aware of laptops and email. And there is a similar sense of the necessity and the value of being constantly accessible and in communication. Now, this is really troubling to some companies. And there are, if you look around, you will find all kinds of different policies around what does and doesn't get allowed at work, quote unquote. I think what a lot of us who are of the older generation need to understand is that part of what this is doing is that it's keeping people from being as capable and effective of making a difference for their company as they want to be and as they can be. But they need to be connected all the time because they're doing work. It's tantamount, let me put it this way, to telling people today, you know, yes, there's a phone on your desk, but, you know, you cannot make personal calls ever or receive personal calls on this telephone. I don't care. This is a company instrument, and you can only use it for company business. Any business that's saying that today just doesn't get it, right? Yeah. And it's the same thing with these other technologies. It's not about you're losing productivity. It's like you've got more experts on your team, in your company, who are really going to be able to carry you into what's happening next.
Now, Mark, tell me a little bit about how these interns are going to be able to pull all. Well, a question for you: do you see interns as having multiple projects?
Yes, and especially in the startup environment, you know, one CEO said it best to us just yesterday. He said, "Well, why should the intern be any different?" We all wear multiple hats. We all have 8 million things to do. You know, the CEO of a startup might also be the CTO for a while, and then maybe the VP of sales, or the sales guy might also be doing business development and market research. So they tend, and this goes all the way through the small business environment also, to share the wealth a little bit. And actually, that's what the Gen Y talent thrives on, that sense of community, that sense of belonging. The sense of contributing right away in several different positions, especially when you compare that to the traditional, you know, coffee and copies, you know, make me some coffee and produce some copies, and that's their function. And then they go back in their cubicle and they sit down and go, somebody else needs some copies made. It's just a whole different world. It's part of the new world, if you will, where these interns want to thrive. They want to be part of it. There isn't a certain amount of adrenaline that comes with interning and as most of us know, working for a startup, and Gen Y loves that.
Now, I found I use a MacBook Pro, and when I had some problems with it, I had to dig around, and in fact, I went on Craigslist to find somebody who could help me. And I found a company, local, wrote them, and lo and behold, this company was put together by two undergraduates at UCI. They hadn't graduated yet, and they were starting their company. They did a perfect job. I think they graduated last year. Their company's thriving right now.
Go ahead, Mark.
That's the nature of Gen Y. This propensity to create and to not sit around and wait for others to dictate their destiny. I mean, this is a huge facet of how, you know, the young adults entering the workforce think, and that's why they're such a huge asset to to other companies. And at the same time, these interns, they get to go to into an environment that's already semi-structured, as much as a startup can be sometimes. They already have some business experience. They already have some level of a cohesive working unit. And the intern gets to learn from that while they contribute, and it's a perfect scenario.
Yes, exactly right. And I would say, Will, that that this example that you just gave us is precisely the nature of how the world is changing. And that think of it this way: if companies, startups, and young and small and not so small companies were really tuned in to so the world of college students and what is there and what's accessible, they would doubtless be part of some small company that was thinking about what they could do and, you know, who could do it with them or for them or as part of. But the walls, if you will, between business and education are still too high, are still too thick. And I think what Mark is talking about, what Mark is up to and his team, is exactly the kind of breaking down or making permeable those barriers between where students are today and where businesses are today and where they all need to be tomorrow, that needs to be, you know, facilitated and nourished and, you know, developed 24 hours a day, because everyone's going to benefit, and we need, heaven knows we need, that kind of innovative activity going on all around the country, all around the globe, frankly.
Now, just to be clear, when we talk about this new language isn't exclusive to under 30-year-olds. This new language is pervasive in the marketplace today. Would you agree?
I would say it's pervasive.
Yeah.
I would say it's pervasive in the marketplace. It's pervasive in the media. But what isn't clear is how pervasive it is in the psyches and in the visceral experience of all of these companies. I think that it's not deeply and fully recognized in every corner of the marketplace, and won't be probably. And that's another reason why this working with college students is a natural component of embracing the new, you know, the value in the new language, let's call it.
Yeah, and this new language, when we talk about the new marketplace and online marketing, instant communication, social networking, that's not something that is like, Levi jeans. I mean, that's not something that's limited to the under 30 generation. This is not a marketing ploy to get involved with that group. This language is pervasive right now in the marketplace, and companies that aren't accessing it are becoming isolated.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I would go so far, if you haven't mentioned it to everybody, you know, there is now a reissued 10 years later version of the Clutrain Manifesto.
Uh-huh.
Which fundamentally says, you know, the marketplace is a conversation.
Yes.
And it's only been, you know, in these last 10 years that the media and the marketplace in general, and marketers specifically, have even had an inkling of what that conversation means. But I'll tell you what, Generation Y, that's all they know how to do, that's all they're interested in doing, and that's all that's going to make sense to them. And it's basically the counterpose to one-way, hyped, managed communication/marketing of the past.
Mm-hmm. Now,
I'll give you a good example of this, Will, if you don't mind.
Sure.
You know, when we launched U-Turn, I had to do something I'd never done before, and that was actually write a blog. And talk about not first language to me. But it occurred to me that this shouldn't be too hard. I should just be able to go and read other CEOs' blogs and find out exactly what they've done and just emulate that. And we do that a lot at U-Turn. We emulate. Because why reinvent the wheel, which, by the way, is another strong suit of Gen Y talent, is they don't want to spend a whole lot of time starting from scratch. They want to improve on what somebody else has already done. Well, it turns out that everybody that wrote a blog that was my age or older, almost all of them started with a sentence something like, I don't really know how to run a computer, and I've never written a blog before, but here we go. and it just seemed to me like that was a definition of what we're talking about here is first of all, why would you say that? And second, didn't they have somebody around them to stop them from imposing that kind of language, that kind of scenario into their first blog? And I was fortunate enough, I have a young lady on my staff named Christina, and she told me, no matter what you do, do not start your blog like everybody else does.
Right.
And so this woman who just graduated from the University of Oregon a year ago has drugged me into the blog world, and we just published our newest blog. It's called Monica Lewinsky, Unpaid Intern, and it's all about this controversy of paid versus unpaid internships and slave labor and all this other, this debate that's going on currently in the internship world. And it's actually become a fun forum for us to articulate our feelings. And oh, by the way, it's now a widely accepted forum that didn't exist even 10 years ago.
All right. So where is this blog, Mark?
It's on. It's you can reach it through a U-turn, but it's our blog site is called thesavvyintern.com, or you can go to U-turn.com and click on the blog link.
Excellent. All right, gentlemen, this has been lots of fun. I think there's a wealth of motivation, a wealth of resources, and just some good practical sense for CEOs in Orange County to pick up on. Tell us, we've got just a couple of minutes left, and let's start with Bill, and then we'll go to Mark. But if you had a megaphone and you could speak to the CEOs in Orange County and you had a minute to talk to them, what would you say?
I guess I would say that the greatest assets at your fingertips are literally like those proverbial diamonds in the backyard. They're right there. They're your young college graduates, your young friends of friends of your children, or of your interns or of your young workers, and that there is so much value in really allowing that kind of horizontal, flat conversation and communication to happen now and to get feedback and to start getting insight from them immediately. And don't wait. Do not wait until tomorrow. Do not pass go. Go get it.
And if somebody wanted to get in touch with you, Bill, what would they do?
I'm bill.washburn@bmic.org.
All right. All right. And, Mark, your turn. Here's the megaphone.
I like this megaphone. I would say, especially to the CEOs and executives of startups and small businesses, is to identify, recognize, and accept that the rules have changed. This newest recession has set the stage for a new economy, and those that are adapting, those that are innovating, are those that are excelling, even to the point of if you look at the companies that are getting funded, the Zyngas of the world, and the companies that are reinventing themselves, Ford Motor Company, for example, Google, who still considers themselves a startup after all these years, those are the companies that are innovating, they're embracing the new economy. They're accepting the new rules, and they're using them to their advantage, and that's what I would say is adapt and excel.
Well, thank you both, and welcome to the Pilgrims on the 405. We're all going to get together on July the 6th, and I hope that you'll be one of us. This has been
Definitely.
A stimulating conversation. Thank you so much for being with us.
Will, thank you.
Thank you, Will.
Very
it's
much.
Been a pleasure.
Good, and there you have it, folks. There is a new world out there, and it's not going to go back to where it was before. We are tapping into resources that we didn't even know were there. There's a new language to be learned. There's a new language that people are already speaking, and we go out and find them, put them on board, and let's see what they can do. I think there's a new world brewing. There's a new marketplace. It's going to be a lot of fun. So that's what the Pilgrim on the 405 sees this week. I look forward to talking to lots of folks in the next week and look forward to talking with you next week.
Yes.
You've been listening to the one and only Will Crist, the Pilgrim on the 405, only on octalkradio.net.